Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast for the first week of May 2010. I'm reporter Elise Hugh, joined by the usual suspects, CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
Hi, Elise.
Managing editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And Ben Philpott's back from KUT and the Texas Tribune.
Hello.
Today we're talking immigration, the debate in Texas, Obama's chances in Texas in 2012, the oil spill in God, and Houston Rocket star Yao Ming. Ben, let's start with immigration, your topic.
Oh, why not? You know, I just think it's been interesting. You've had Republicans from across the wide spectrum of Republicans, from the middle to the far right, saying what they think the state should be doing in the next legislative session in terms of immigration, obviously specifically jumping off of what Arizona just did. And I'm having a chance this week to talk with the three people running for chair of the Republican Party in Texas, and it's just interesting to again hear their own message so far is a much more moderate one than we might be getting from Representative Leo Berman or Representative Debbie Riddle, which is let's immediately enact the Arizona laws. A couple of the people that I talked to yesterday, and you know, I'm just going to completely forget their names: Meckler and
Ministeri.
Yes, Ministeri.
How about that?
Thank you, Mr. Ross Ramsey. So Meckler actually, Ministeri actually thinks that this is something that could, that whoever ends up leading the Republican Party in Texas needs to make sure that they have a more inclusive approach. They all say, look, the reason that the Tea Parties are so successful is because the Republican Party did not present itself as a good avenue for their anger. They got mad at what was going on in Washington, and instead of going to the Republican Party, which they align with in their own beliefs, they decided to form their own little thing.
So inclusiveness in this case means more angry people?
Well, inclusiveness means be the party that if you are upset with the administration, you don't have to create your own thing. You can view the Republican Party as your rightful landing place.
And here I thought you were going to say that they were concerned they were not being inclusive enough to Hispanics. Silly me.
And as part of that, though, he did go on to both of them.
I mean, surely they have to understand that inclusiveness in this case needs to mean don't take the coming majority group in this party, in this state, pardon me, and tell them to leave the party, which that would be tantamount to doing.
The two candidates I talked to yesterday both said that's the reason they have to be careful on immigration.
Oh, yeah.
That they're only getting 30% of the Hispanic vote in the state, the Hispanic vote, which is only going to grow and grow. And they have to figure out a way to present this as trying to fix what's wrong with immigration without saying, oh, and by the way, we hate immigrants. Or we hate Hispanics.
Well, you can tell, Ben and Ross, that they're all, everybody in the Republican Party in the state who has put out a statement about the Arizona law is trying to walk a very fine line.
Except for Leo Berman and Debbie Riddle.
Except for Leo Berman and Debbie Riddle. Right. But the point is, like Perry and the other statewide, and every prominent Republican in Texas who is running for elective office has got to balance, on the one hand, not pushing away the hardliners, and on the other hand, not pushing away those Hispanics in Texas who are still inclined to vote Republican.
And the fast formula everybody's taken is, I understand your anger. I don't agree with Arizona's solution. That's right. Where they've all sort of landed.
But, you know, I led the governor's. In that respect, I thought the governor's statement last week, which was reported as conclusively anti-Arizona, if you read it, actually gave the governor quite a bit more wiggle room than that.
I think it was very, very artfully put together. It was one of those things you could bring to it, whatever you walked away with, whatever you
right.
brought to it.
If you said to the governor, do you support the Arizona law? Would you support an Arizona law in Texas? It's not like he just said no. He really sort of walked around the block a few times and then
right.
sort of said sort of no.
It's almost like secession. I can understand why some people would feel that way.
Well,
but I never said that we should secede.
I actually think that it would be hard for somebody to come back at the governor if the governor suddenly flipped on this, because the polls are showing
that's the point here, right?
The polls are showing that the public is actually for the Arizona law. All the Rasmussen and other people who've polled on
right.
this, people tend to be more for the Arizona law than against. If suddenly it was in the governor's political interest to support a law like Arizona's in Texas, he could very easily say that he left himself room in that statement to do so without it seeming like he was flip-flopping.
Well, this is one of those things you'd want to join on to something this potentially controversial that quickly. And in fact, Arizona has an election coming up, and everybody gets to see, and by everybody in this case, I mean the politicians around the country who are interested in having a position one way or the other on this and haven't decided yet, can look at the Arizona election that's coming up and say, okay, that's the referendum on the Arizona law. So when
part of the Arizona election? The governor's
when
race?
When the governor's race in Arizona comes up, people are going to vote on whether she should have signed that or not. And that's going to be the first electoral test of the Arizona law by people who are actually watching it. So the people of Arizona get to say, yeah, we like this. No, we don't like this. Then the courts are going to come at this and say this should have said probable cause instead of reasonable suspicion. They're going to get into all of that. There's a lot of nuance here, and nobody wants to sort of plant themselves until they figure out how the nuance is going to land with voters.
Yeah, and I think the Republican leadership knows that. I mean, they know that. I think Governor Perry obviously knows that, hey, the courts are going to take a whack at this. Right. There's no reason for me or anybody to jump out. And you know, we've still got, what, 6 months till
the object lesson.
Session.
The object lesson here, I mean, the conservative politicians benefit from the conversation even if they don't take a position,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And the object lesson here is the early 90s, Pete Wilson's the governor of California. He goes out, former mayor of San Diego, which is a border city, and he goes out too far in California's case against immigration and loses his next election. So the first guy who jumps in the wake of this is this fella in Texas who's running against Ann Richards. His name was George Bush, and the Democrats tried to bait him with the immigration question, and he said, no, I think Pete Wilson was wrong. I think we should welcome people right. to our country. They came in for the same reason we all did. That was, you know.
Right.
That's the object.
He was hospitable to the Hispanic community, and he actually was rewarded at the ballot box. He
did very
with
well
a
with
very
the
high percentage
right.
of votes from the Hispanic community relative to the typical Republican.
Right.
Perry has not done as well as Bush. Perry's done fine.
Right.
But Perry knows that, you know, it's his race to lose going into the fall, just numerically.
Right.
And but for a precipitating event, he can,
like an act of God.
Well, an act of God would be one.
Jumping topics here.
Maybe the Arizona immigration law is for Bill White an act of God. He thinks, well, but the point is that a precipitating event could throw Perry off of his purposeful stride toward November. Well, taking the wrong position on this and awakening the Hispanic vote and causing them to leap into the arms of Bill White en masse would be a precipitating event that could alter the course of the election.
There's no real advantage to being fast on a deal like this for a politician. There's, you know, let's wait and see how this, if you're a politician, you got to wait and see how this sorts out before you take a position.
But why have so many other people around the country taken a fast position? Jeb Bush took a fast position. A lot of other people.
So did Tom Tancredo. Do you see this?
Well, and we talked about this last week, that this is, you know, an anti-immigrant law, too conservative even for Tom Tancredo.
Right.
We said this last week.
Right.
Perry, though, you know, you call it artful. I would say that it was, well, I guess artful. Maybe I'm thinking of other things. I think that he didn't actually say I'm for it or I'm against it.
I think that was artful. That's exactly why I think it was artful.
Well, but shouldn't he have to say?
Why? I mean, if you're, let's take it.
Cause?
Take it from his, you know, let's wait and see how this sorts out. I mean, as a political matter,
what is there to sort out? You're either for a law like that or you're against it.
Yeah, I feel like on some level we expect our public officials who we elect to take positions on things based on principle and just, you know,
you don't have to take a position on everything.
Right, sure.
Well, this is not everything.
Right.
Well, right.
This is not, do you like enchiladas or tacos? This right. is actually something consequential. I mean, I kind of think given the hysteria over this, and there has been a massive reaction to this thing,
uh-huh.
it might be interesting to say to him, you're either for it or against it. And I guess he would probably argue that he said he was against it, but I sure saw a lot of light in there.
Right.
A lot of running room if he decided to change his mind.
Right. I think he just, like we started, I think he landed on, to the extent that he landed anywhere, he landed on, I see that the federal government should enforce this stuff, and I understand why these people are mad and felt they needed a law. I don't think that's the right law.
Okay.
Let's jump ahead to an election a little farther away, 2012, right. and Evan's topic, how Obama might do in 2012.
Well, I know it's fashionable to talk about 2012 after the 2010 elections, but fashionable is not my
concern. Starting on March 3rd.
Not my concern. I know from having talked to the young man dispatched by the Obama for America organization to Texas the other night, a guy named Luke Hayes.
You got to wonder if this was community service ordered by a judge or something.
Look, I'm told he volunteered to come to Texas after he had his pick of places to go, and he came here. That there is going to be a serious ramp up on behalf of the party and on behalf of the president in a run up to 2012 to see if they can somehow recapture the state for the Democrats. I think even the most generous and Democrat-friendly person observing this series of events would say this is an uphill battle. There was an 18-point differential between how Obama did nationally and how Obama did in Texas. He won the country by 7 points. He lost Texas by 11 points. I'd argue that as of right now, Obama would lose Texas by more than 11 points if the election were held today. On the other hand, 2012 is still 2 years away, and a lot can change in 2 years. And the reality is, back in 1994, when the Republicans took back over Congress during the Clinton administration, no one would have predicted that Clinton would win, relatively speaking, the election in 96 so handily. And it was partly because the Republicans couldn't decide on a candidate who could capitalize on Clinton's problems, and they really didn't have a program to advance as an alternative.
I loved Bob Dole.
Well, Bob Dole was interesting to watch, but Bob Dole was a lousy let's just say he's a war hero. He was a great public servant. He was a lousy presidential
candidate. Really great in the Senate, you know.
He was
effective in the Senate. I'll say that.
So the Republicans, at least as of right now, don't have an obvious choice, and there's not. Right. You know, as much as they would argue they have put forward an affirmative program, that party of no thing does kind of stick. And so just as 94 wasn't 96, 2010's not 2012. And so the Obama people may have cause, at least nationally, to be optimistic. But is it – and this is sort of the question I want to put before you guys is it a good idea relative to other states for the Obama effort to spend a whole lot of money in Texas? You know, they might argue that even if we don't elect Obama, we're going to help a bunch of other people on the ballot. They might say with all sincerity, no, we think we can get Obama to beat any Republican. But goodness, as I imagine the use of money in this state over the next 2 years to 3 years, money to try to get the Democrats to take back the state at the presidential level, I'm not sure it's the most well-spent money that there is out there.
Is this maybe a little bit of a test case? So the guy's here on the ground now. He starts organizing. We see what Bill White does in the fall. If there's some reason to, you know, if Bill White loses but loses closely, or what somehow he wins, for the Democrats to then say, aha, and if Bill White loses by 10 points, then the guy gets shipped off to the next state that he's going to drive.
They're probably looking for signs of hope.
Right. And this is also, you know, I mean, at the worst, this is that head fake that they do every 4 years. You know, they come to Texas. Both parties do this. This isn't just the Democrats. Both parties come to Texas and pretend that the state is in, you know, it's up in the air.
They force the other side to spend money.
Right. We're going to come in. We're going to raise a bunch of money here, but we're going to spend a bunch of money here. So first you have to give us the money. Texas is a big repository of money. And they're coming in here. They're going to raise a bunch of money from Texas that they can use in places that actually are swing states. And if Texas turns out to be a swing state, which would be, you know, new.
Then they spend that money here.
Then they spend that money here.
Yeah.
Even if Texas were a swing state, though, if you look at a national map and you say, okay, so we've got these swing states lined up. One of them, let's make up a state, say New Mexico.
Well, how about Arizona?
Arizona.
Well, suddenly,
say they're
newly
swing states, right? Arizona and New Mexico combined have fewer people in them than Houston.
Yeah.
And they're cheaper places to run for office. So you could win two states. That's four senators.
Right.
Cheaper than you can run in one state. That's only two senators. Texas is going to be at the bottom of the list, even if we're a swing state.
Right. One argument, that could be made for why it's a no-lose proposition for the Obama folks to have this kid here and to have this effort underway is that Obama won the election last time without the electoral votes of Texas. And any map that they build for 2012 has to assume that he'll have rougher sledding in states like Virginia and North Carolina and Indiana than he did last time. But he did win, from an electoral vote perspective, the election handily. There was a map. Remember, before Obama blew out McCain, there was a scenario where all Obama had to do was win all the Gore states, or win all the Kerry. There was some.
Right. Yeah, Kerry states plus one.
Plus one. There was actually a thinner map that had the potential to get Obama elected, and none of those maps included the electoral votes in Texas. So, if they think, as Ben says, coming here and spending money is plowing soil for the future, great. Right. Who knows?
When somebody smart comes forward with an electoral map that includes Texas in the states that are in contest, that's going to be big news. They haven't done it yet.
That's true. That's true. Well, we're going to try to get somebody on this question of how Obama doesn't. We're going to send a reporter out with, hopefully, with this fellow who is here from the Obama campaign, and see if we can't get to the bottom of exactly what he's up to.
Dateline Amarillo.
That's it.
Ross, let's come kind of back to Texas and talk a little bit about the politics of this oil spill and how it's become a little bit controversial in the governor's race.
I'm reading a definition here, acts of God, a manifestation, especially of a violent or destructive natural force such as lightning, a lightning strike or earthquake that is beyond human power to cause, prevent, or control.
Give us some context there.
Rick Perry told a group in Washington, a group of reporters, a gaggle as they call it, that, you know, suggested that the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico was an act of God. And a couple of days later after the, I guess one day later after the, that didn't go so well in the papers and then on TV, he told a gaggle of reporters here in Austin, down on the steps of the Capitol that, you know, actually what I meant by an act of God was that we don't know what it is yet. And that's everybody's definition of an act of God. And you guys just ought to look it up and back off a little bit.
Is that your definition of an act of God?
I just read my definition.
Well, no, you read like Webster's definition.
Well, you know, the implication here was that, you know, nobody was to blame for it. And in fact, what, you know, he says he was now saying, now what he now says he was saying is that, you know, I wasn't saying nobody's to blame for it. I was saying we don't know who's to blame for it, and it at that point is an act
but
of
not,
God.
But not knowing who is right. to blame for something, you know, sometimes a piece of mail from the previous day ends up in the recycling in my house. That's not an act of God. That's an act of Wyatt. My 9-year-old son did it when I wasn't looking.
I was about to say, I never would have got away with acts of God
no,
as a 9-year-old.
This is not an act of God. This right. is an act of a human, and humans caused this to happen. I don't understand how by any plausible definition, this could be an act of God.
And that's why it's so funny, because Bill White ends up showing his wonky side in this whole deal.
He released a 10-page memo, didn't
he? I'm imagining him sitting kind of at his computer in the middle of the night, you know, pencil in his mouth, like looking at his research books. Oh, okay, you know. And then doing this double-spaced 10-page memo explaining
He
does have a background in both energy in a general sense and oil, and I think, in fact, offshore oil stuff in a specific
and
sense.
Wonkiness.
This is, after all, his issue,
right.
And you can understand why he might want to put out such a paper, but it does highlight in full relief the contrast between these two guys.
Could you boil it down for us humans, please?
Not 10 pages.
Ten pages was his boil down.
Can I have the Cliff Notes version of what's going on?
You should have seen the original draft. His press people got to it and said, no, it can't be. We can't laminate it. Come on.
What the act of God thing does, Ross, is raise again the question of, you know, this is, of course, splashed all over the liberal national
They loved, oh my God,
Governor of Texas declares this an act of God. So does it matter ultimately? How does this reverberate back on Perry necessarily in a bad way?
I don't think it's terribly bad, but he obviously felt like he needed to correct it. I mean, we were at a, you know, this gaggle that was over there listening to him talk about acts of God was there for a presentation on the Special Olympics. You know, it's sort of a deviation from the message of the day. But, you know, he obviously felt he had to correct it. And I think in a general election, you know, you have to win in the middle. In a Republican primary, you're talking to Republicans. And in a general election, whether you think you're going to win or not, or whether you think you're in a red state or not, you've got to talk to independents and people who aren't Republicans. And, you know, getting painted over to the right with acts of God and all of that, you know, and having the press react that way, obviously, Perry felt like he had to fix it.
Do you think Ben Independence would hear this statement and do something different than they would have done had he not said it?
Oh, gosh. You know, I don't know. I mean, maybe not in Texas. I think even independents in Texas are more conservative than your regular independents. So I think that...
You're saying we're not regular, son?
Yes, that's exactly what he's saying.
And please give out my address now. Yeah. You know, I'm going to just use some stereotypes here. So if you're in a more liberal state where maybe, you know, them damn atheist liberals, they probably would have a field day over it. But, you know, even a moderate Democrat / independent probably.
So maybe Perry lost Christopher Hitchens' vote. but who else?
Pullman. I mean,
I'm not sure this is on that many people's radar.
This isn't necessarily the standard, you know, God, not God question. This is about, is this corporation responsible for spilling this oil? Or are you trying to put off this corporation's responsibility for spilling this oil?
Now that's interesting.
That talks
because I heard the other morning on NPR, I heard the CEO of BP on the air live with the host of Morning Edition say, I mean, it was not wiggle room. There was no running room. It was BP is responsible. BP will pay the cost of this. Total hesitation. Okay, so that's an interesting interpretation that hadn't occurred to me.
Yeah, that's. I think that's what
that
this is about.
Act of God equals not act of BP equals BP not responsible equals you're welcome, oil companies.
Equals offshore drilling not responsible equals please drill more.
Right.
Well, didn't the governor and Jerry Patterson both come out today still in favor of offshore drilling?
As did Bill White.
As
did Bill White. Somewhere in page 8 or 7 or somewhere.
which is really interesting because White understands that, you know, he's of course has this background as we said, and plus he's not going to pick up any votes suddenly becoming an anti-offshore drilling guy.
Right. None of us got to work on a trike this morning.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, reality is reality. We need, you know, we're using all this oil. You got to get it somewhere.
The only thing I will say is that the national storyline only matters to the degree that people in Texas feel like having Texas held up as this sort of mocked state is a bad thing net for people who live here.
Right.
You know, we've gone through this year of the State Board of Education and all this other stuff that people perceive to be reflecting negatively back on Texas. And so yet another thing, another, you know, log on the fire here would presumably be this, although as Ben says, I'm not actually sure that people in Texas view what the governor said as being all that.
I'm going to backtrack just a little. I think that the idea of this is another maybe unintelligent statement from another politician in Texas and the equation of that, you know, might have a little bit more effect.
The question is which of the two Perry utterances of the last week were more problematic for the state of Texas? The oil spill was an act of God, or I shot a coyote and turned him into mulch?
So let's kind of stake tangentially on this topic, maybe off coyote, more onto Chinese dude, and
I don't know. I don't know how you get from A to B there, pal.
Right.
On your road.
Well, I guess, you know, the fact that that is a disconnect is also kind of what I'm talking about. White is airing his introducing Bill White ad in the Houston market and maybe some other markets. Perry has not come on TV yet with a response, but is doing a web video response, which kind of mocks the ad and parodies it. In it, you see White appearing in photos with several kind of nefarious characters like Barack Obama, Arab businessmen, a crying baby from that Texas Monthly photo. And
it was a great shot. It was
Yao Ming. And so, and I guess the question that I put out today or on Wednesday on the YouTube blog is, why Yao Ming? You know, this guy, we don't know his politics. He is Chinese. He's tall. He's a basketball player. But what about Yao Ming kind of equates?
What's the message here of the inclusion of that photo?
See, I think the problem is you're going to have to be as wonky as Bill White to think about this message, this little subliminal message. But, you know, there has been a lot of argument that this United States should not enter into any kind of cap and trade stuff until we can force China to stop polluting so much.
So in the web ad, they're complaining about cap and trade as they're showing a
Chinese
guy.
Yes, they're complaining about cap and trade while showing White with Yao Ming.
I think they were just going for a funny tracking shot because the shot in the commercial starts with a close-up of Bill White's face and then tracks up for about 4 miles till it gets to Yao Ming's face.
Yeah, this could be he's a little dude.
Yeah,
I'm running against. That could be part of the
plus.
Message.
Doesn't he look funny next to this really tall guy? Right.
Also, it could be the Rockets suck. That could also be a message. I mean, the message
is putting the question out there.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of struck me, and I clearly wasn't the only one because I got some emails about it.
Do you think that there was anything inherently racist about the association of White with Arabs, White with a Chinese basketball player? Is there some hidden or not so hidden message about he's not one of us, he's one of them, he's, you know, that
well,
whole...
Well, what you see depends on where you stand, though,
do
right?
they have was White with anything, Pancho Villa in the...
Was there anything subliminal when the left ran ads against George Bush with the people from the United Arab Emirates and with, you know, I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, everybody in this business is smart and intentional about what they're doing, and especially commercials. I mean, they're really good at visual vocabulary and all that stuff. They did all that stuff for a reason. That baby, if you're listening to the copy in this particular ad, it's on YouTube and it's also on our website. if you listen to the copy, that picture when the baby's crying fits exactly with the copy in the ad. You know,
what is it saying?
I can't remember exactly the words, but it's sort of like, you know, if you didn't get the cue to feel bad about it, look
oh,
at the baby's face.
Oh, it was about how his taxes. Yeah, right. It was like, still hasn't released his taxes.
Still hasn't released his tax returns. And the baby's crying in his hands. The baby wants the tax returns. It's, you know.
Yes, the
this
baby.
This stuff is all intentional.
Yes,
right?
The baby wants his tax returns.
Made a baby, cry.
Yeah. All right, we'll leave it at that. If you have any comments or questions for the Tribcast, you can email podcasts@texastribune.org. On behalf of Evan, Ross, and Ben, I'm Elise, and we'll be back here next week.